You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky with now we've officially gotten there, Andy. It's no longer a cliche. It's a must win game six for the Lakers.
Yeah, this is pretty damn big. There's no way around it. The Lakers down 3-2 heading back to Staples Center. And if you're looking for some type of optimism, or as we often say, forced, it is likely.
I tried that before game five and it didn't.
Yeah, but your forced optimism was also stupid optimism. Like I have offered in the past some forced optimism that at least was, I think, backed by some statistics that you could bend or whatever. Yours was just dumb. But anyway.
Just made it up.
Yes. If you're looking for some type of optimism heading into this game, it is damn near impossible for them to play worse in game six than they did in game five. Doesn't mean they'll play better, but it is pretty, like they would have to go out of their way because they're on the take and decided they'll make a little extra cash on their way out the door. And they threw game six. It would otherwise be pretty much impossible to play.
Yeah, I do like to say all the time, it can always be worse. Like it can always get, this actually may be the exception to that.
Game five
might have been rock bottom in that regard.
We spent years telling people between basically the period of Phil leaving and the turbulence that came to that, all the way up to last year's championship. Every time people said, oh, it can't get worse for the Lakers, can't get worse, we kept saying, no, really, it actually can.
Of course it can. Absolutely. Yeah. But I think you might be right about that. The latest on Anthony Davis, after practice at least, you know, on Wednesday, Frank Vogel said, we'll see. He did some stuff on the court to just loosen it up, but they're not getting ahead of it. It'll be up to the medical staff and blah, blah, blah. And exactly the sort of thing that you would expect Frank Vogel to say. It's very clear Anthony Davis wants to play. Chris Haynes put out a report that Tuesday courtside, he put up six fingers indicating he thinks he'll be back for game six. I'm sure he wants to be back. I'm sure he hopes to be back. I don't know if he's gonna be able to play. My assumption is that, like LeBron said after game five, he's proceeding like Davis won't be able to play. And if he does, great. I think that's the right way for the Lakers to approach game six.
Frank Vogel also said that KCP at this point's a game time decision as well. He's had two game time decisions. One of them, he didn't play. Game five, he did play, but he wasn't able to finish the game. Maybe he might have been able to gut through it more if it looked like it was even remotely winnable. But either way, it's pretty obvious KCP is not where they want him to be physically either.
Yeah, and it is easy to focus just on AD, and rightly so, given who we're talking about here. But the loss of KCP is significant as well. It's significant defensively, against Devin Booker. It's significant for their offense. Not that he's been shooting particularly well, but he's another guy who can. And somebody who runs the floor well, can get out on the break and all that sort of stuff. So, particularly when you're down a superstar and, it really becomes all hands on deck, when you're missing some of those guys too, it just gets that much harder. So it really is a significant thing as to whether or not KCP can play Thursday night, and we'll find out before the game starts, I suppose. But there's a lot about lineups that I know we want to talk about, and we'll do that over the course of the show, trying to figure out what adjustments maybe that Vogel and his coaching staff might be able to make after just the disaster that was game five. And we'll talk a little bit about too what goes away on both sides of the ball without Davis and how they might be able to fix it with the personnel that they have. We'll do that before the end of the show. But I want to start with something you pointed out on Wednesday's show. And then, we were throwing stuff back and forth, just getting ready for today. A quote from Frank Vogel after game five, when asked about game six, he said, "We'll find out what we're made of, and we'll find out how bad we want this," in reference to game five, game six, and how well he thinks they'll play. I'm interested to hear how you interpreted that. I do want to tell you that today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. I mean, that's a little bit more pointed than he tends to be when talking about his team and his and their attitude and their outlook and things like that.
Well, I mean, it reflects a lot of what we talked about. In particular, I brought up during Wednesday's show that this was one of the rare times where this team, A, just did not seem mentally up for a fight, and B, really didn't seem like, if you want to get into the cliches, not wanting it bad enough. And like we said before, I don't mean that in terms of not recognizing the magnitude of all of this, or, you know, like who wants it worse, you know, that who wants it more can often get thrown around lazily. But when you think about it at its kind of most literal and its most sort of base definition, it's talking about a willingness to fight through adversity. And mm-hmm. I did not think the Lakers were willing to fight through any adversity during game five at all. And like, I'm not looking to put this out there as a sweeping indictment of this team, because A, it's out of character, and B, that would be premature. But in terms of just sheer fight, they need to do better. There was not nearly enough. And that was something that I think Frank Vogel absolutely recognized in this game. And like you said, him calling out the team, as much as Frank Vogel ever,
right, because it's not, I mean, that was not a scathing criticism,
but by his standards,
it was notable. Absolutely.
By Frank Vogel's standards, this was the equivalent of publicly going scorched earth and lighting up his players. Like, if you've been around him enough, that's Frank Vogel speaking for.
Pretty pointed.
Yeah, that's Frank Vogel speak for, you know, like, the hell is wrong with you people? Like, do you want this or not?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I went back and I watched a little bit, tried to watch a little bit again, you know, not just sort of look for some of the things that we had talked about on Wednesday's show. And, you know, the point that you're making about fight and fighting through stuff is fascinating to me, because it's always hard to differentiate between, you know, when you say a team is playing, are they sluggish because they're playing poorly? Or are they playing poorly because they're sluggish? Like, all of these things become intertwined with each other. And there's no question that the Lakers looked like they lost their confidence in game five in ways that had never really happened. I mean, player to player to player, with the exception of, I don't think LeBron lost his confidence in himself. He was a little down on the guys around him. And I thought Kuz looked like Kuz.
Yeah, I agree.
But short of that, you could see the hesitation from everyone else on the roster. And I don't know if that's an unwillingness to fight through the adversity, or if it was just a moment where they ran into a place where they couldn't. Like, they just couldn't. They didn't have an answer for it. And that became the thing that it's demoralizing. Maybe that's the same thing as what you're talking about.
Well, here's,
but the other, let me just say one more thing. The other thing that, because you mentioned this on Wednesday's show as well, that has been critical for the Lakers in these moments where Davis has been out, or LeBron and Davis have been out, that they've always been able to hang their hat on is intense effort and getting by on that. The playoffs are a place where the value of that goes down, because in the regular season, you can take a team by surprise, you can get them on the end of a road trip or whatever it might be. And if you can out effort teams in meaningful ways in the regular season, it's hard to do that in the postseason because everybody's playing really hard. And so that edge that they've been able to get in the absence of some of their stars isn't nearly as useful, I think, in the playoffs. And then it comes down to things like, are your guys able to hit shots? Can you move the ball around the floor and create offense and all this other stuff? And almost to a man, the answer is no, they have not been able to do it.
Well, here's why I think it really was more about a willingness to fight versus what you were talking about, like you're playing poorly because you're sluggish, that sort of thing. Or, you know,
I just think they ran into a place where they were trying and it didn't work. Like, what they had available to them. And they lost. I agree with you. They lost their sort of mental edge.
I think it goes beyond that. I think this was a place where they really were unwilling you know, unwilling, unconfident, however you want to put it, to really put forth the fight that was necessary. And one of the things that speaks to me about that was the hesitation you saw in this game to put up shots. And it was interesting when LeBron was asked about the game six mentality, he said, quote, shoot all the bullets you got and throw the gun too. And, you know, obviously there's a very leave the gun, take the cannolis, fear the quote, and feel the quote. We know LeBron loves the Godfather trilogy, but like beyond the idea of leaving that chamber empty, you got to go in with the idea of firing at will. Like that chamber ain't going to empty itself. Mm-hmm. You got to be willing to fight with all the bullets. You have to be willing.
Well, yeah.
You have to be willing. Let me finish. You also have to be willing to fight and even lose. Like the most difficult fights are the ones that are the hardest, where the ones where you actually either are outmanned or are disadvantaged, and you end up doing the fight anyway. Like those are ultimately the fights that are the most noble. I don't even mean that necessarily in sports. I just mean in life. Like those are actually the fights that I think people look back on historically or whatever, just because they're the most difficult ones, as opposed to fighting from a place of advantage. And they've got to be willing to fight this way, even when things aren't going well. Like if you can't make shots, at least fire enough to scare your opponent, like do something. And it felt to me like they weren't willing to do the do something part.
I guess so. I mean, I think that's what happens when you lose your confidence, when you're like, I'm hurting my team by doing this. I'm going to try to find a better shot for somebody else. I'm hurt. I'm not helping.
I don't know.
I mean, if you want to define losing fight, fight through it, do some, I don't know what should they have done other than keep shooting and keep their confidence. They lost their confidence. And so you can't let that happen.
But you've got to okay. This is the perfect example.
So what should you do?
Keep going. You have to be willing to fail in a fight. Ultimately, I mean, you know,
in that sense, I would agree. But that again, they lost that confidence and the edge that they had.
Well, then we're talking about
and
the
so
same thing.
So you know, you have to figure out a way to fight through that. In that sense, I agree with what you're talking about. You certainly can't let that happen again in an elimination game, which is what they face on Thursday. The other thing that's been, you know, widely talked about among Lakers fans, Lakers media, basketball and media in general, is what the Lakers might do with the lineup. If you're looking for clues, Andy, about which guys are, you know, the secret weapon or the thing that unlocks the keys to success, I am not entirely sure they're there. We'll talk about the lineups next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing prices of makes, models out there, it's impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. And why would you spend 30%, 50%, 100% more on the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new dealership anyway? I know. Seriously, man. If you can't see the sucker in the room, it's you. You can get it for way less at rockauto.com. Rockauto.com always offers the lowest prices available rather than changing prices based on the market like the airlines do. Don't get me started on the airlines, Brian. This is on the internet, so I cannot swear to the veracity of it. But according to this person on the internet, every business in America has to give a kickback to the airline industry, just like a little taste to wet their beaks if they know what's good for them. It's just what I've heard, but it feels objectionable. It's not like rockauto.com. They're a family business serving auto part customers online for 20 years. They have everything from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, new carpet even. Whether it's what you need for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, everything your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. Andy, I went through both, you know, the plus minus, you know, the fancy plus minus thing they have on Basketball Reference, the box stuff there, and the net ratings for this series and all that kind of stuff, and trying to figure out what the Lakers might be able to do with the lineup. And a lot of this comes down to the center position. Maybe we start there. Andre Drummond doesn't feel like the problem. They haven't been particularly bad. I'm including game five when he plays. If you take game five away, he's actually one of the few guys on the team with a positive net rating. Marc Gasol has been really bad in terms of net. If you want to use net rating as a metric, he has not been helpful in the slightest during this series. And the guy that sticks out as having the best net rating, the, you know, some of these best plus minus moments, is actually Trez. I have been, I don't want to say anti-Trez, but Trez hesitant. I've not been confident in his ability to kind of swing things favorably for the Lakers, despite the fact that he is a talented offensive player. I think I'm wondering if I'm just wrong about that, and what has played out even in small sample sizes on the floor. Montrezl Harrell with a net rating of six, which for this team is good. Again, small sample size, throwing out game five. That's way better than some of the other guys that I've seen. And Drummond has been fine, and Gasol has been awful. So I'm not sure where the secret lies, other than like we have an expectation of what we think these guys ought to be doing and have the impact they're supposed to have. It's not necessarily actually playing out that way.
Well, I mean, first of all, with Harrell's net rating and plus minus and any type of advanced stats, I think you have to apply some degree of grain of salt to it, because it really is so small sample size.
I'm not really sure what you
can glean from it. So again, I would be trezident to make much of it. That being said, Brian, it does feel like perhaps change is afoot. No matter how we feel about it, Andre Drummond, right before Frank Vogel was made available in Wednesday's practice, and the guys were, I guess, done, tweeted out, LOL, remember, kids, control what you can control and let the rest take care of itself. And then a prayer hands emoji followed. Could be potentially hinting at a lineup change. It really did feel like we were dealing with
But like, who would you put? Like, would you go with Gasol? Would you go with, I mean,
if I was to change
a lot too lately,
look,
would you put in Gasol? Would you pull Drummond from the line? Would you give Trez more run? I mean, how would you handle the center position at this point?
Yeah, I mean, look, first of all, like you said, Trez has been subtweeting. Keith had tweeted out the day before he got that start, opportunity. We'll see if he tweets out later, like opportunity over or something like that, because Kuz really ought to be starting. I think you should still start Marc Gasol. And the reason is because I think overall the spacing is so important for this team, I think, to try to get off to a good offensive start, that even though I agree with you, game five notwithstanding, where Drummond, like pretty much everybody else, was awful, I don't think Andre Drummond's been a problem.
But relative to everybody else, Drummond, if you had to rank guys, Drummond played one of the better games of games the Lakers played.
That's fine, but that, I mean,
but throw ranking, that out. He's still been better than, he's still sure. been pretty good, I think, over the course of the series.
I understand that, but in terms of game five, I mean, you're ranking poor performances. Does it really matter?
But set that aside. I think that what my basic point is, I think a lot of the enthusiasm for Gasol is not necessarily teased out in the results.
I understand.
And that's the larger point that I'm getting at I think structurally all of what you're saying is true. And this, you know, this gets to, I think, some of the problems that the Lakers just have as a coaching, a lot of bad choices here that they have to make. But I don't think what we're thinking should happen is necessarily happening when Gasol is playing.
Well, I don't disagree with you there, but I think ultimately this team has to be thinking offense first in terms of trying to get off to the start that they need, and in terms of trying to keep the pace that they have to get going. And I think the best way to do that is literally at the beginning of the game. And I think with that in mind, especially if you're trying to create more opportunities, relative opportunities for LeBron to drive more, they're obviously still going to pack the paint. They're still going to do stuff like that, but you can at least make them think about how they're going to do that. If Marc Gasol, who can both pass and shoot from outside, is stationed somewhere else. Like, you give them at least some type of thing that they have to consider. I agree with you. The numbers do not bear all this out, but a lot of these numbers, you know, require us to go through every single game and every single possession to see exactly what was going on there. I feel like there is an argument to be made for going with Marc Gasol to start this game and going with much more of an offense first look, particularly when I think you have to bear in mind too, how do I think some of this will play out better without Anthony Davis? Because I think some of what was making Andre Drummond more effective was Davis's presence.
No question.
You don't have Davis there, in some ways, I think the math on a lot of this data goes out the window. So acknowledging that a lot of this is guesswork, theoretical, on paper, however you want to put it, I think they should strongly consider Marc Gasol ahead of Andre Drummond. It certainly seems like Drummond is expecting that as a possibility, and definitely Kuzma should start. If Markieff Morris starts again, I'm really questioning what Vogel's looking for.
Yeah, I do think Kuz needs to start. The part of the problem is you have to figure out a way to spread this stuff effectively throughout a game. And you know, if you go back, I mean, going back and looking at it, you know, the substitution pattern, you know, it wasn't like they got the doors blown off of them, you know, before Gasol and Kuz were able to make it into the game. You know, I'm just looking at the substitutions at it now. I mean, Kuz was in halfway through the first quarter. Yeah. Gasol was in half, you know, earlier than that. Gasol was subbed in very early.
Yeah.
And those guys were on the floor when the wheels came off.
Sure.
So,
but I think the wheels were coming off anyway.
Like, sure, maybe, but this is the problem. And let's talk about this next, because trying to throw darts at this stuff, I'm wondering if we're even focused on the right problem. And I'll explain what I mean next.
Locked On Lakers, Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at Bet Online. This week, as always, tons of sports action on the go. So get all your latest news, odds, info for your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, UFC, MMA. Before the next pitch, go over to Bet Online on your laptop, mobile device. Check out all the great sporting news, sign up bonuses, contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams are neck deep in the playoffs. Head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the promo code LOCKEDON. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
Would you agree? I mean, fundamentally, the biggest problem the Lakers have right now is how to generate offense. In that sense, I agree. You know, Kuzma, I would be playing in front of Markieff Morris. You know, a lot of the stuff with Gasol is all built around how do you make it easier to score for LeBron to score, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that to me is the biggest problem. I'm not in love with the defense either, but that to me seems like the bigger problem.
I think it's worth noting, for as much focus as there's been on the offense, and you and I certainly focused on it as well during Wednesday's shows on Twitter, blah, blah, blah. The defense without Anthony Davis, and to a, you know, lesser but still tangible degree, KCP, is considerably different and worse. But especially without Anthony Davis, like the way the offense is built around LeBron, the defense is really built around Davis. And I don't think thought of nearly enough that way. And game five was a reminder.
Well, it goes back a little bit to what I was saying in the first segment about, you know, part of the way that they were able to get by without these guys is because they worked incredibly hard defensively. They were they're disciplined. They're all these things. And those play bigger dividends in the regular season than they do in the playoffs. Chris Paul's had, you know, five games now to sit there and pick apart the Lakers and what they look like on film, and Devin Booker and Monty Williams and his staff and all these guys. And when you're staring at the same thing over and over and over again, the weaknesses that Davis's absence create are the types of things that a good team with a good point guard and all that, and the Suns had the second best record in the NBA, and they have got a Hall of Fame point guard. These are things that are going to get, so to speak. And, you know, I mean, this is, you know, Phoenix in that sense is well suited to take advantage of Davis's absence. Like the matchup really, I think, shifts a little bit to their favor in that way. Because the Lakers have, as you can tell, have a lot of trouble dealing with Ayton and what to do there. Some of this, I think, you know, you can argue over Wes Matthews versus Tucker. You can argue over, you know, which center you need to play. And these things help with the margins. The margins matter. There's no question the margins are incredibly important. They can be the thing that differentiates. And I'm not trying to minimize the last two segments. If somebody like Dennis Schroeder can't just, you know, he was 0-for-4, a lot of open shots, missed a bunch of stuff at the bucket. Like, if he can't make some of the shots or generate some of the things that were in front of him in game 5, those same things are going to present themselves, Andy, in game 6. If he can't convert those things, the Lakers are going to lose because he is supposed to be one of their best players.
No, like, absolutely.
Their best players need to play like their best players. And then they need the contributions from the supporting guys.
Well, no, but I mean, here's the thing. Everything that we talk about in terms of analyzing what's going on with this team, what happened after a game, what we thought went well, what we thought could be made better, how we think it could be made better. This is all predicated with the idea of guys are playing well. Therefore, you can do these things to try to create an advantage. If they're not playing well, by and large, unless the other team falls apart too, or you just get superhuman from LeBron. Yeah, this is all academic. None of it matters.
Right.
You're correct about
it's,
that.
Is I mean, the next man the next man up thing? I mean, it's always been, and I know as fans, you sort of think that way. The team obviously tries to think that way. That, you know, it's next man up. It's next man up, and that's how you have to go. You can't just pack it in. But there's a reason that the next man up might have been, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 men in line. LeBron has to make more shots. Dennis Schroeder has to make more shots. I think as much as I thought Kuz played a pretty good game, he's got to, you know, he's got to do even more, a little bit more. Like, theoretically, he is one of the best players that the team has. And I think trying to figure out how to squeeze out, you know, something from guys who really, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, that are having to do things so far beyond their prescribed role on this team when things are as they should be. I sort of sometimes misses the point. I don't even know what to do with that, but it just, I don't want to focus all on, you know, the shortcomings of, you know, rotation guys and forget to talk about how the team's best players need to be better too. That's all. Yeah. I think that's basically what I'm getting at.
They absolutely do. I mean, LeBron was not the problem, but they were looking for him to be the solution, and he was not the solution in this game. Granted, his assist numbers were not his fault.
He had 7, could have had 70. It was ridiculous.
But you could, I mean, you could argue, and I would say this is a possibility as an argument just because it is the opposite of what you and I both thought was going to happen and frankly should have happened. LeBron began this game looking to set up other teammates, get them involved, where you and I both thought he was going to be like, seriously, you guys go to the places you're supposed to be, stay the hell out of my way. Mm-hmm. And he was going to set the tone that way. I was surprised that he didn't, because he's the one guy who I think on this team can elevate everybody else's confidence.
Okay, so like, here's what I would say, and I am not enough. They had some moments where they were able to get him down in the post, to, you know, take attention away, move guys around so that Phoenix couldn't put 5 eyes on him at the same time. 5 sets of eyes. 5 eyes by itself would be weird. That sort of thing they need to be able to figure. Because I think he actually wanted to. I think, you know, there's always that balance with LeBron, and he always sort of plays, he tends to play in that way where there is a little bit of a feeling out. And the formula has worked for him. I'm not objecting to it. I actually think he wanted to do more of what you're talking about there if Suns wouldn't let him, because particularly when he had the ball on the perimeter and he was looking to go downhill and put the ball on the floor as soon as he touched the ball. We talked about this on Wednesday. Five Phoenix Suns abandoned what they were doing and took four steps towards the paint. And it's why his first shot that he hit was a three, I think. And so, like, to try to stretch that stuff out. And this is why I'm a little pessimistic just about how they can get through this thing, because I have a lot of respect for Phoenix. I don't know how you fix that. I don't know how you make it so LeBron can do the things that he would want to do that we are looking for from him if guys don't hit shots. And the shots were there. The offense is functioning in that way, and they're going to be even more there because Phoenix is going to continue to give them every open look.
Well, that's
further than 8 feet away from the basket.
By the way, that's another reason that I would start Gasol, because I think if nothing else, it makes it easier to play LeBron off the ball and get him moving more, where it becomes more difficult to keep track of LeBron himself. Like, every single advantage you could potentially create for LeBron, I would look to do that as well. And I mean, you know, we had talked earlier about Montrezl Harrell and whatever role he could have in this thing, mm-hmm. or continue playing very little. I think that there's an argument that you could make for putting Trez out there more. I could see the argument that seems to be going through Frank Vogel's head about why he hasn't been putting him out there. This is all right now, especially when you're dealing with, you know, an incomplete roster. There may not be a solution available to you, but to whatever degree you're fighting to find it, it's about looking to try to find these pieces and really trying to manufacture things that work maybe even just one time. And that one time is all you need. And then you figure out the next game. Like, right now it's about how do you get through this one game? How do you create advantages for this game six that maybe don't even exist in game seven because they're simple enough for Phoenix to figure them out, limited for it, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think everybody involved, like, obviously the players need to play with much more assertiveness, much more confidence. I think Frank Vogel needs to coach with a little more flexibility, like proactive flexibility in terms of his overall approach.
It's hard because, you know, you put Gasol, you know, they put Gasol and Kuzma in early in game five. And, you know, presumably you have more offense available on the floor and doing all those things. Like, those are the offensive moves. And so I to kind of wrap it up, I think what you just said there about confidence is critical here. I think that ultimately is what we're talking about, because if they're going to give themselves a chance, it's not, if they come out in the first quarter and they hit three of their first four threes and they're getting up to the floor and they're taking the energy from the crowd on it, that's awesome and it's great. And, you know, maybe that can kind of break them out of it in the way that, you know, one great inning can break a baseball team out of a collective slump. That can absolutely happen. The real question is, what happens if they miss their first four? What happens if Phoenix gets up 8-3 and the shots aren't falling early? And I think that gets back to, and we'll end here, what Vogel was talking about, what you were talking about, what we were talking about before, about can you keep enough confidence to keep playing the game? And we'll see. We'll see if they can.
Here's the thing. Like I said, I think Vogel ultimately has to come up with different approaches that work, but the one thing he can't do for them is fight. That's up to them. He cannot make them fight the way they need
fight,
to this
game. Believe, however you want to define it, that thing is something that they have to do themselves. Be sure to check out all the content that we've got going up on the YouTube channel, Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Hopefully, Andy, we will not be discussing the final game of the Lakers season on Friday's show. We'll be getting
really
ready for a game seven on Saturday. Fingers crossed, people. That is what's coming. But we'll see everybody next time.